John, you're the first guest that we're having right now that is not directly linked with comedy.
Yeah, you know, I realize that. And I know a couple of guys that here in the States that know you. Well, actually, I'm in Spain now. So, you know,
nice one.
Yeah, yeah, they speak highly of you. And so when you guys don't beat me up too much here in comedy.
Tell us a little bit about your podcast.
It's Mafia Truths, it's called. And I just got a new book out called Mafia International, John Alight. And the podcast talks about some of the past things that went on and some of the present and future, what I do with kids now and with education and schooling for to keep kids off streets.
You know, Josh knows this for a fact. I'm a big Scorsese fan. I watch everything that he's made. How much of what we see in those movies is actually true? Because I've been brushing up on my mafia talk.
It's about 1%. It starts with the loyalty and then there is none. And then it goes into the treachery and that's everything there is. And it's self-preservation. So if anybody tells you anything else, it's about money. It ain't about loyalty or pride.
So everything that we see and that is it hyper-glorified what we see about loyalty, about no ratting, about having a guma, because that's my favorite part about being in the mafia.
That's one thing we all have. That's the only real. There's the 1%. You just found it.
that would have been one motivation for me to join the mafia. They'll say, "Is the money?" And I'll be like, "No." "Is the power?" "The respect?" "No." "But you do get a guma," though. I'll be like, "I'm in."
You know, I was in West Africa, right? And there you're allowed to have 3-4 wives. I forget how many you can have. So I'll meet you in West Africa.
But John, you have to admit, transparency kills the fun in any extramural activity, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Now you have to be accountable.
Yeah. And that's where all the adrenaline rush goes away when you're accountable.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. You seem like a very nice guy, very smart guy. How does a guy like you, you grew up in Jersey, right, if I'm not mistaken?
No, I grew up in New York, and then I had houses in Jersey also. So I had houses in Florida, New York, New Jersey, and so I moved around a lot. And I just grew up in the life. My father was partners with a guy named Lucky Luciano's first cousin. His name was also Charlie Luciano, famous gangster. And my baseball coach was part of Albert Anastasia. And murder and court. And so I grew up with that family. And since I'm 3-4 years old, these are the people I've been around. I'm Albanian, but I grew up around the Italian mafia since I'm a kid.
So as an Albanian kid growing up with the Italian family, you just become Italian by default?
You become Italian by default, but since you're a black man, you can understand racism, right? So to somewhat extent, right? And in my culture, growing up in a mob world, it was very racist against me because I'm Albanian. So I had to take it to the extra step.
Really?
to be accepted. And the way to be accepted is violence and money. So, you know, they could say something different. But, you know, when they tell you another guy's better than you because his blood's from, you know, Italy or his father anyway, it becomes something that, you know, obviously, you know what prejudice is and what it's about. Yeah. And I'm Albanian, so we come from a communist country. So I know what suppression's about, actually.
Yes. Do you still have family in Albania?
Oh, yeah. I got more family in Albania than I do in the United States now. Yeah.
How has the world changed for you since you've stopped being in the life?
You know, it's funny. There's so many people every week wants to challenge me, to fight me, to test me, to, you know, and I got to take it with a grain of salt and laugh because, you know, they had 50 years to come after me and nobody did anything. And, you know, listen, when you're in the life, you get stabbed up, you get shot, you get beat up. That's part of the life. But you got everybody instigate me now. You got the trolls, there's hundreds of them that come after you. And, you know, when you retire, you retire. They're trying to get you to put your foot back in. And, you know, oh, he ain't so tough or he ain't this. But if I'm not that guy, then why do you keep trying to get a name off me? So that'll just tell you I am that guy.
If you take the John from then and the John from now, what does this John know that the other John didn't know?
Well, every time I hurt somebody or killed somebody or shot somebody, I knew I was going back to jail. So it's like self-inflicting yourself with pain. And, you know, and I try to teach the younger kids that, you know, there is no victory on the street, no matter what goes on, because you're going to pay down the line. You're going to pay the pipe. You're going to go in prisons like I did, in and out for 2 decades. So, you know, there is no, and your ego, you learn humility. I learned to change my life and not be so insecure about the tough guy stuff that everybody tries to bait me back to.
You know, one thing that's interesting in our country right now is we have state capture, right? So what happened is, in state capture, is a lot of politicians for 10 years were looting the state coffers, right? So with little businesses that they were doing with the state, so they would make millions and millions of rands. So millions of dollars as well, because ultimately what was looted in the 10 years was almost $65 billion. I mean, billion rands.
Oh, they want to be friends with Joe Biden.
So we had this inquiry, this commission of inquiry led by a judge in the Constitutional Court, right? But what I'm finding out is, in the last 3 years, you used to see all these tough guys who didn't want to testify, but now everyone is singing like a canary, to use your slang. But what breaks a person down to that level, right? Because I always think to myself, if you are an influential guy and you have money and you have protection, and all of a sudden that protection goes away, where does it get to mentally, where you feel like you don't have the protection and you start becoming yourself? Because I always say to my friends, not everyone who's a thug is tough, because prison is another story altogether, right?
Yeah. Hey, you know what's funny is, you make people laugh. That's what you do. That's a God gift that you use to make people happy. And the guys you're talking about, they just use their talent to make people miserable, right? But when they're standing alone, they can't stand. So, you know, I name a lot of bosses over the years. And it was just another article in the front page of the New York papers. Another boss that he just passed away has been an informant the whole way through, they're saying. So I watch these bosses, then they all hide. As soon as they get caught and they start cooperating, they're not sticking around New York or New Jersey or any of the East Coast areas they're from. They're hiding under a rock somewhere. So it'll tell you how tough they are after, when they don't have 1,000 guys, 500 guys, 100 guys, 50 guys with them. They can't stand on their own 2 feet. So the truth is, most of them are weak. I mean, there's always tough guys. There's a lot of tough guys that are street guys, guys in jail. But the real tough guys in jail, I'm going to tell you, that people don't ever talk about, is the ones that are never getting out of jail, the lecture kids that just come to jail, don't live this life. Those are the real men, the real guys in jail that, you know, they tell you it's just suffering and it's a bad life, and they try to lecture. And you know, guys don't talk about them. They talk about other guys, you know, and they speak about guys like Gotti, the father, you know, who died in jail. And you got these guys in the street that are trolling on computers. And that poor man suffered his last years of his life, you know, in every which way. He died of cancer. He died alone. He was getting extorted at one point because, you know, he's an older guy now. A guy sucker punched him. And, you know, these are the things that go on as you get older, because jail's a young man's place. Now, if he wasn't in jail, obviously those things wouldn't have went on. He had the power to take anybody out when he felt like it. And as a young guy, that wouldn't have went on, because if they would have tried him in jail as a young guy, he could have handled it. As an older man, what is he supposed to do? And then you got these dummies that talk from computers because they're playing a video game, and they think being on here makes them a gangster. Oh, I'm going to kill this guy on the computer. I'm going to, you know, and they talk like, and they're teaching young kids to behave like them. And that's the problem. And, you know, I try to tell the kids, listen, I was that guy. I was that guy that was suffering. I was that guy in those jails that were crying. And, you know, I try to be honest with them. And then you're like that guy in jails that are stabbing people too, because it's survival. So, you know, you try to give them the full understanding, not the, you know, for me, I want to tell people, follow you, right? Laugh. That's what life's about. Not at any of my old friends.
Do you see the change in the kids' eyes whenever you talk to them about this life, about what went on when the cameras were not rolling per se, and the glamorous life was not there, and you're in a prison cell and have to survive? Do you see the change in their eyes and the perception that they've had for so long about this life?
Yeah, because most mafia guys, right, and you can look through the history, they don't travel around the world. I've been everywhere. I've been to the Ivory Coast. I told you I've been to Senegal.
Yeah.
I lived all over the world. I'm in Spain now. I know the European life because I lived all over. Most of these guys never leave their neighborhood. And when they're trying to lecture these kids, they're not telling the kids about the rest of the world that's out there. you know, when I go, you know, we're friends now. So when I go to South Africa, I can go pull up in the airplane and come see you and go to dinner and know the world. When I come to Spain, I have friends meet me here. That's really what life's about, going to the beach. We're joking about women, but woman is what we all, you know, everybody's, you know, to meet a beautiful woman, to go out to dinner, to go to a club, to go to a show. And you think about these guys sitting in a cell dying, never getting out, some of them. This is not life. This is not, you know, we don't have 10 lives. So, you know, it's a great message that you give of laughter. And really, that's one of the reasons I said, well, I got to do the show with you guys.
Yeah. What is it that makes a great leader? Is it fear, or is it a great personality? Because I'm starting to veer towards thinking that some of these great leaders or mafia bosses were people that had personalities that people gravitated towards.
Well, John Gotti was a great leader, in my opinion, because he knew how to maneuver people. That was his biggest asset. But I don't believe in fear, because I had a lot of friends that I thought were my friends, but as soon as trouble hit, you know, they all gave me up. You know, it's not what people think. You know, people always talking about, you know, this guy told, that guy told, that guy told. But the truth is, they're all telling. It's the ones that are telling undercover, the ones that are just giving information, the ones that are just straight out telling, like what happened to me. I never got caught. No way. It was just 50-something guys giving me up. And then after the 50-something guys gave me up, I came in. So the belief of these guys being stand-up guys and don't exist. It's a fairy tale. You know, unfortunately, the kids are just like I was. You know, you're young. And the excitement, you know, I seen the excitement. I saw the money. I saw the cars. I saw the girls. I love the attention. And all your friends are just your friends for your money, or friends because they want to be part of you, because people are afraid of you.
You know what I'm always thinking of now that I'm getting older? I'm turning 40 now in 2 months.
How old are you?
I'm turning 40.
Wow, listen. That's not all. I want to get to you.
Hold on. Give me 1 second.
One second, John.
I'm back. I'm turning 40 in a few months. And you know what I always think of? And I always think of, isn't everything that we do when we're younger kind of leading up to what we want to have when we're older? Because when you're younger, 40 looks far away, right? And when you're in comedy and you're making a lot of money, you always think of what you can do with the money now. But when you get older, don't you think we're all trying to get out of the life somehow, whether it's crime or entertainment? You somehow, I'll speak for myself, as an entertainer, you want to get to a point where you're just doing entertainment because you want to. Not because you need to, not because now your manager books the shows and then you need to go to the shows, because if you don't go to the shows, then this life that you've set up for yourself, you can't maintain it anymore. And that's the biggest fear of most entertainers. I know they won't say it, and I know I'm going to get crucified for this, but that's the biggest fear that we have. You start out as a guy going to clubs, telling a few jokes, and then people laugh. And then you get bigger and you have your own one-man show a little bit here. Then you start making money. Then you do a little bit of television, and then the trappings come. You have a nice car. You live in a nice neighborhood. And all of a sudden, sometimes you just don't feel like going and making people laugh anymore. But your life is so connected. Your lifestyle is so connected to this one thing that you do. And everyone around you thinks it's so simple. They just think you just have to get on stage. Don't be selfish. Get out there, so your manager can get paid, the venues can get paid, the audiences can laugh, and you can maintain this lifestyle. But the fear of knowing how fragile this lifestyle is hanging on this little tiny thread, that if you one day don't feel like it anymore, and it's not even about the ability to do it, it's about what if I don't feel like doing it anymore? All of it is gone.
Yeah, first of all, if you get crucified, give me a call. I'll come to the Ivory Coast and hang out with you in South Africa. Hey. So here's just what you said makes a lot of sense. And here's one of the biggest misconceptions people have in the United States. In the United States, people work day and night, right? Just to get by, to live, but not to live life, to financially live. When I travel abroad, all over Europe, people have a different understanding of life. Yeah. They enjoy life and they work so they can enjoy life. So in the United States, it's the opposite. They have no enjoyment. They just go to work day and night. They want nicer things, but they really never let live life, and life passes them by. Instead of enjoying it while you can enjoy it, and when you lose the fun out of when you first started your career, you love your career because it was fun, and you know you had a goal. And then when you reach a plateau, and everybody knows you, and you're famous, and now you're just maintaining your life because you elevated your lifestyle from down here to up here, and it becomes a job. And when it becomes a job, I think things change. That's what happened, in, believe it or not, in my criminal life. I was making so much money, but then I had to maintain it. And by maintaining it, it means you have to still be violent. You still have to demand the respect you're getting from the street by doing that. The only way you can do that is by earning big money. Earning big money, you have to have guys. Having those guys exposes you, and then you never get away from the violence. But when you pull back like I did, right, and everybody's still attacking you, I can look at my friends now and say he's really my friend because he's staying with me, not because I'm that gangster anymore. He's staying with me because me and you are on a telephone talk because we're friends. There's nothing that you can get out of me from the street before. So I think that people sometimes lose their direction and forget about, they think more about money than instead of enjoying life. And there's only one bedroom in every house. Doesn't matter how big that house is. You can only sleep in one bed, only one watch TV, only sit in one jacuzzi. But to be happy, you got to truly be happy inside. I made myself truly happy now.
I can relate so much to what you're saying, because there was times when I was miserable in the house and I didn't know why I did this for. And I was sort of chasing a feeling. It took me a long time and a lot of money to realize that I was doing that. I was chasing a feeling. I wanted to know what it felt like living in a nice neighborhood, or when you drive past the gate and someone calls you sir, because they have to.
Right.
I didn't know how addictive that feeling was, you know, and there's something about the human condition that just wants one instant gratification, but also it takes something very drastic for us to realize to stop. And we can, in a global view, we can talk about COVID, but for most people, it's losing their jobs, losing money, losing a loved one. Something drastic has to happen to a human to sort of find enlightenment, and commonly known as rock bottom, right?
Yeah.
And is it nice when you're enlightened, when you seek the rock bottom yourself, when you look for the cul-de-sac in your own life for you to reset?
Well, it goes back to humility. I said that when you have at the very beginning, when you get humility and you get rid of your ego, you don't care if they call you sir no more. You don't care if they recognize you on the street. You don't care if they're famous or not. People tell me all the time, oh, you're famous. I'm going to say, yeah, I am, I guess. And, you know, I've done GQ magazine, Forbes magazine. You know, just recently Forbes, there's an audio out on my name and a tape on Forbes that did it about 6 months ago. And at the end of the day, who cares? I was very, very wealthy before. And now I'm not. I'm more famous now. But who cares about the wealth? Because I'm in a happier place now. I do things that make me happy.
Yeah.
And that's saving kids' lives. So saving young, not just kids, but guys that are in prisons that don't have the strength to change their life. It's hard to change your life and go in a completely different direction. I reinvented myself. And, you know, I do so many things with the organizations. I feed the homeless. I do a lot of stuff that people don't see off camera that I do that makes me feel good. You know, before I did nothing but bring in a lot of misery, and it looked good. It looked exciting to everybody, but it was a lousy life.
Tell me about your book. I want to hear about this book because I'm going to read this book. There's one book I'm going to read after this.
I have four books out. I have Gotti's Rules was the first one that was a bestseller, New York Times bestseller. And that talks about me working with them as a young kid. The second one was a book called Darkest Hour. It's with me growing up from a little kid to about 17 and how I slowly get involved with the mafia. And the third is just a handbook. It's Prison Rules. And my friend Nick Christopher helped me write that. My first one, George Anastasia wrote. The second one, Susan Pike. And now this last one is Lou Romano. It's called Mafia International. And what it does, it diversifies. It talks about friends of mine that I'm here in Spain with that we're doing this new movie, TV series called Nordic Narcos. It's about Klaus's life and what he's done and our friendship from Brazil jails to Denmark to around the world. We've been friends since we're young. So he does a chapter, and one of the boss's sons that was involved with Murder Inc. with Albert Anastasia, he does a chapter. they on their perspective. Another guy from Philadelphia, his father was one of the bosses. He does a chapter. And then I bring in what people don't bring in, you know, and we'll go back to color now. I bring one of my black friends in who does a chapter. And and I laugh because people say, well, he's Irish. He's not a gangster. He's black. He's not a gangster, because they're talking about the American mafia. And that's the furthest thing from the truth about gangsters. A gangster isn't by their blood. It's by their, you know, ability, like I said, and heart and power with, as far as making money and violence. So I bring in my friend TT, and he does a chapter. And I brought in one or two other guys, and I give their perspective and my relationship with them and around the world and what business. I wasn't the typical mob guy that stayed in New York or Jersey and never left. I went to probably 40 countries by now or better around the world. So I had different hooks.
Outlook in life.
Yeah. And, you know, I talk a little bit about Brazil, and because I spent almost 3 years in prison there, 2 years and 7 months. And so it's a different kind of well-rounded international book about the mob.
I think if there's one person that has won in this whole game, it's you. You managed to get out of it. You're living life in Spain right now, having the best time, creating content, about to earn big royalties. You're making number one bestsellers. I think you made it, my man, and changing kids' lives and showing them that there's more to life than instant gratification and violence. I'm very happy and I'm very proud to call you my friend now.
Thank you, Gene. You know what it is? Like you said, it's as you're getting older and you're still young. So,
thank you so much.
I got another 15 years on you. But you know what? You learn to try to make yourself happy before you try to make the world happy, right? So when you're happy, you can help other people. And like I said, you can always be proud because you're making people really feel good. At the end of the day, when you finish doing your show, walk out there and feel good about what you're doing. So I think that's the most important thing in life. How do you make other people feel good that are suffering through whatever, suffered financially, suffered through relationships, alcohol, drug problems, street problems. They come from poverty. And, you know, I think I found the way to kind of be like you but without making them laugh. Well, maybe we'll make them laugh a little bit today because I'm on here with you. But, you know, and we do something positive. That to me, that's a more important thing. And we have friendships around the world. And this is really, you know, some of the things that maybe some young guys will see us and say, yeah, I want to be like them.
Oh, man, let's spread the positivity. Thank you so much, John.